how nice it is to have Greta back this morning with us. And now we'll just ask her to come on up here and bring us the Lord's word this morning.
Good morning.
Oh, that's nice. You guys got it first try. Good job. We're working on our new church, getting them to get the good mornings flowing. All right. Get myself situated here a little bit. Yeah, this one's dead. I think this one's gone. That we need to batterize this. Okay, I'm just going to go through this one then. So, I want to get you caught up a little bit on all things Davis before I dive in. It's good to be back. We're back this weekend because Friday was Ashley's birthday. Happy birthday! She's almost a quarter of a century now. Since you've seen us last, we've had a lot of developments in our lives here. Chris has a church now. He is the pastor at, get this one right, Vanderhoof Baptist Church in Coolville. We are very cool in Coolville, Ohio. And he's a bivocational pastor there, and he's also a sanitarian one in training for the Mid-Ohio Valley Health Department. What that translates to is he's a health inspector. So last week he went around pestering lunch ladies at the local schools. So he's doing all of that. But the upside of all that is wonderful how God works. He is in the same town that I'm in where I work, and we work on the same schedule. So Monday through Friday we can ride to work together. His office is 2/10 of a mile from mine. So it's really great. We get to get to work together every day. It's very nice. More time that we have together every day. So that's very good, and we are blessed with that. I'll tell you another story. To be very careful what you discuss about with your spouse, because God may perceive that as a prayer and answer it like that. One evening, Pastor Hubs and I were watching the exploits of our two dogs, you know, the senior dogs who are 11 and 9 at home. We have the dopey big dog, and we have the 10-pound terrorist known as Baxter, you know, the one that likes to watch television, and he runs the place. And was just being so mean to the bigger dog. And I told Pastor Hubs, I said, you know what we really need is some big old dopey puppy that doesn't know any better to just come in and roll him from one end of the house to the other, because it doesn't know that he's the boss. I am not kidding. The next day, this man goes to the church. It's freezing cold there in November that day. And there is a puppy at the church that somebody dumped off. The sweetest puppy you have ever seen. No collar, no tags, no one's claimed it. We didn't know. It had been there for 3 days. One of the deacons had been coming feeding it. His wife was telling them they needed it at their house, and he was on his way to call animal control and come pick it up. Well, Chris didn't want to let it go because he didn't know if it was a kill shelter or not. So we are now the proud parents of Phoebe, who is a big old dopey puppy that does not know any better and rolls the schnauzer from one end of the house to the other. So, yes, we are now a dog family of three. But anyway, that is really not my message today. But that's what, and I do enjoy my job, in case you're wondering. And we do love the farm. We're enjoying our farm and getting to know it. So it's been very nice there. So the title of my message to you today is a biblical performance review. I don't know if any of you have ever been employed in a job where you got a performance evaluation. Anybody get performance evaluations in your jobs? Boy, those are fun, aren't they? Everybody look forward to those? If you've received them, you probably think that's terrible. But if you've ever had to give them, that's equally as bad. I've been on both, and I'd rather just get them. I really loathed doing them. And where I had to, you have to sit in person and give them to the person. Like where I get mine now, it just comes by email. It's so much better. You just read it, click a button, and move on. But my former job, you had to meet with the person and talk with them. It was uncomfortable for everyone. So whether you're getting a review or receiving one, there's aspects of this review that happens. Your employer looks at your job description, takes note of that, looks at how you've been doing, and makes your review. But there's sometimes some other things they look at too that aren't in your review that are kind of unspoken, like does the person show up on time for work, or do they show up at all? Are they cordial to their coworkers and their customers? Those kinds of things. So when I was preparing this message, I decided to look at actual quotes from performance evaluations and give you a few of them. So here are some. These are real. Since my last report, he has reached rock bottom and has started to dig. His men would follow him anywhere, but only out of morbid curiosity. This young lady has delusions of adequacy. This employee should go far, and the sooner he starts, the better. This employee is depriving a village somewhere of an idiot. Some drink from the fountain of knowledge, but this one only gargles. So these are kind of funny, right? But only because they're not in your evaluation. Am I right? Yeah, if it was in your evaluation, it wouldn't be so nice, okay? So Jesus told a story once. It was actually a parable about a master giving an employee evaluation of his servants. And you can find this parable actually in two different books in the Bible. You can find it in Matthew in chapter 25, verses 14 through 30, and in Luke chapter 19, verses 11 through 17. And the difference between the two, the biggest difference, is the number of servants. Luke has 10 servants, Matthew has 3. So today I'm going to read from Matthew from the King James Version. The parable of the talents, and the one that's projected might be from the NIV, but that's okay. So we'll find out as we go along. Yeah, it is from the NIV, but that's all right. We're good with this. And it's actually good that it's from the NIV. So, for the kingdom of heaven is like a man traveling to a far country who called his own servants and delivered his goods to them. And to one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, to each according to his own ability. And immediately he went on a journey. Then he who had received the 5 talents went and traded with them and made another 5 talents. And likewise, the one who had received 2 gained 2 more. But the one who received 1 went and dug in the ground and hid his Lord's money. And after a long time, the Lord of those servants came and settled accounts with them. So he who had received 5 talents came and brought 5 other talents, saying, Lord, you delivered to me 5 talents. Look, I've gained 5 more talents beside them. His Lord said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. He also who had received 2 talents came to the Lord and said, Lord, you gave me 2 talents. Look, I've gained 2 more talents beside them. His Lord said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. Then he who had received 1 talent came and said, Lord, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you've not sown and gathering where you've not scattered seed. And I was afraid and went and hid your talent in the ground. Look, there, you have what is yours. But his Lord answered and said to him, you wicked and lazy servant, you knew that I reap where I've not sown and gathered where I've not scattered seed. So you ought to have deposited my money with the bankers. And at my coming, I would have received back my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to him who has 10 talents. For to everyone who has, more will be given, and he will have abundance. But for him who does not have, even what he has will be taken away. And cast the unprofitable servant into the outer darkness. There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. May God bless the reading of his word. In this parable, Jesus is talking about the kingdom of heaven, and he's preparing his disciples for a time when he won't be with them any longer. Now, some people read this parable, and they read it as a justification for the gospel of prosperity and economic growth. But is that what Jesus was really telling his disciples, and is that what he's telling us now? Was he telling us that we're really just to go out there and make more money and just keep prospering? I don't think that's what it says at all. So remember, if you're looking in the book of Matthew, the parable that precedes this one is the parable of the 10 virgins. And that parable teaches us that we personally have to be watchful and be ready in case there's a long delay before Jesus comes back. So why after doing that parable, would Jesus then follow it with one about being shrewd and wise and investing the master's money to get a greater return, or depositing your money with the banker so you at least make some more money? Well, he wouldn't, would he? As Jesus often did, he uses situations common and known to those at that time so that things make more sense to them. And that's what he did here. He told them, the master's going to go away. You have one, and he's going to be going away. And he's going to be gone for a long time. But he is coming back. In the meantime, he's entrusting you to do his business for him. He's given you what you need to do the job. You have the tools, and you have the assets that you need. But what is he going to find when he comes back? Because he's coming back. What is he going to discover? But before we go too far, what is a talent anyway? Are we talking about doing shuffle and dance? Are we talking about that kind of thing? No, we're actually not. In the Old Testament, a talent was a unit of measure. It was about 75 pounds. That was Old Testament. But we're in the New Testament now. So the New Testament is a unit of currency. So how much is a talent worth? Well, as you can imagine, a long time has passed here since when this was written, and scholars like to debate things, so they can't agree. So some say it was worth about $1,000. One talent was worth about $1,000. Others say it was as much as $30,000. That's a little bit of an adjustment, isn't it? So some even say if you had 5,000 or 5 talents, you would be as rich as a multimillionaire. So that one servant would be a multimillionaire in today's standards. So if we're looking at this parable, servants 1 and 2 invest their talents. They had 5 and 2 respectively. But I want you to look carefully at that. This master didn't give everybody equal, right? It's not like he had 9 cookies and everybody got 3, right? He gave it to them respective of their abilities. So servant 1 must have had a few more abilities. He got 5. Servant 2 got 2. And he must have knew a little something about servant 3 because he only gave him 1. So when the master returns and wants an account of how they did, servants one and two, they happily report that they invested and they doubled the talents that their master gave them. But servant 3, can't you see him? I'm walking up, dusting off where he dug up his talent. Because, you know, it kind of seems a little silly that he buried his talent, but at that time it was common to bury your treasure. Pastor Hudson, I remember talking about one of the sermons he gave right before we left about buying land. You found out there was a treasure on it, you'd go through and buy it because you knew that treasure was there. It was common to bury things. But you can't just see him dusting himself off, maybe had a little mud streaked on his face. Says, he comes back and he says, look, I'm bringing you what you gave me. What you gave me is back and it's there for you. And he has a whole lot of excuses as to why he didn't do as good as the other two, right? So he says, you're a hard man. I was afraid of you. But I guarded what you gave me, and I'm giving it back to you, just exactly like you gave it to me. But in this performance review, there's really only 2 ratings, right? Well done, good and faithful servant, and you wicked, lazy servant. Throw this worthless servant outside into the darkness. Now, I know which review I want. How about you? So I want to look at one thing before we go a little further. Servants 1 and 2 receive that high praise, well done, good and faithful servant. But if you look at verses 21 and 23, they are also invited to enter into the joy of their Lord. This is one of the reasons that I chose the New King James Version to read from today. If you look at the NIV, they're invited to enter into happiness. If you look at the Message, the master invites them to be his partner. And if you look at the New Living Translation, the master says, let's celebrate together. So they're having a party. This is a reminder to me, and I really believe that the King James Version is probably a lot more close. If you look in the book of John, one of the things that Jesus left with us was what? Joy. He left us his joy. The other thing was his peace. So this is just a reminder that Jesus gives us more than happiness, more than circumstantial glee, but the joy and the peace to those who accept him and follow him. So the poor other guy, servant 3, he gets cast out and he gets weeping and gnashing of teeth. The other thing about weeping and gnashing of teeth I'd like to tell you is that you can find that 6 times in the book of Matthew, and nowhere else in the New Testament. So Matthew must have kind of liked that a little bit. He liked that phrase, I think. So we've seen the two ratings, well done, good and faithful servant, and wicked, lazy servant. So which one do you guys want?
Well done.
Well done. Right. Thank you, Kathy.
Well done.
Okay. So how do we get there? How do we receive that level? So this parable means that to be prepared for Christ's return, you can't play it safe. You can't dig what Christ has left you and bury it in the ground. You have to use it. You can't be checking off the boxes like, okay, prayed, check. Read my Bible study, check. Went to church, check, check. That's not going to cut it. It's not going to get you there. So what does it mean for us? We have to emulate Jesus' very ministry. He was here. He walked among us, and he showed us what to do. We are to feed the hungry, cure the sick, bless the meek, clothe the poor, serve the least. Most importantly, we're to reach out and preach the good news of the kingdom to the whole world. And we're going to do this by going about the work the Master called us to do. Visit the sick and in prison, clothe the naked, welcome the stranger, and feed the hungry. But what does this look like in our everyday lives? How do we do this? So I've recently been reading a book, and it's called Glad You're Here. This is it. Actually, I brought it for you. Glad You're Here, Two Unlikely Friends Breaking Bread and Fences. I really like the book. I'm not done with it yet. I've read a book review about it. I've read some interviews about it, and I really can't put it down. I'm almost done. But the authors are Walker Hayes and Craig Allen Cooper. Walker Hayes, anybody recognize that name? Yeah. I see some nod back there. It's that Hayes, that fancy-like Walker Hayes. So since moving to my hometown, you can't go anywhere without encountering country music. I mean, like anywhere. I go to get my hair done at the mall, country music. I go out to eat any place, I don't care where it is, country music. Grocery shopping, country music. Pumping gas, country music. In my dream shell, country music. So I started to listen because I hadn't really listened to much of the country music genre since like way down yonder on the Chattahoochee, Friends in Low Places, and Any Man of Mine, you know, where I'm going with this. So I started to look for stuff for my playlist. I mean, who doesn't like Fancy Like? Some of y'all got it in your head now, right? Applebee's on a date night, you know, Bourbon Street Steak. Ashley's doing it right now. So I wanted to hear some other Walker Hayes songs, so I started looking for some, and I'm going down through some of his songs, and one's just called Cray. Now, what dude writes another song about another dude? So I had to play it and hear it. Now, if you're paying attention, the service was getting ready to start. That's the song. Ashley leans over and says, who picked this song? I said, I did. But that's the song. And as I listened to the song, I thought, there's got to be a story there. So I had to look, and it is. There's a story behind the song, a true story. And it's the story that's the basis of this book. So it's a story about a friendship that sprang from how God used upper sports, basketball, actually, to introduce a struggling alcoholic musician with five kids to a pastor who would become his best friend and next-door neighbor. When Walker met Craig, Walker was not a Christian, and he didn't believe in God. He states that he suffered from church PTSD. He wanted nothing to do with church or anything that went with it. He was only in a church because his son played basketball. His wife met Craig's wife, and the two wives decided that Walker's family needed to go to church with them that night. And if you read the book, you're going to see that he felt stuck. He didn't have any way out of it. He had no excuses, and he had to go. So he ended up going, and he saw something different, though, in that church. It was different than any of the others. It was the people. They welcomed him. They said, glad you're here. And they were genuine. He could tell it in their voices, and he could feel it. And he could see they actually meant it. And that was the first night in his life that he didn't hate church. They didn't really like it, but he didn't hate it. So he went to find his kids, and they were playing Foursquare. And they were having fun. And and jumping and being loud, and they were doing the things that kids do, and no one was yelling at them for it. So then he joined in, and he played with them too. And he lost track of time. That was different. So this wife had to find him and drag him out of the building and make him go home, and that was very different. So on the way home, she said, "How did you like it?" He had to go, "It was okay." Also different. So he didn't mind going back to church the next time, but he says in the book that he wore his four-square shoes the next time, so he was ready. So Craig continued to approach Walker and showed a genuine interest in his family. Craig reminds me of the crazy puppy that we have, because she won't stop. She just keeps coming. She loves everybody, and she just keeps coming, and that must be Craig Cooper. Craig continued to come to all of Walker's shows on Wednesday nights at a local restaurant slash bar, yet Pastor went to a bar. The crowds were less than packed, usually not even listening. But Craig worked the crowd, but probably not why you think. He wasn't working the crowd to get new church members. He wasn't working the crowd to get people to come to church with him. He was working the crowd to get them to listen to Walker and Walker's music, because he believed Walker had talent and the people needed to listen to him. The families grew closer and closer together, but Walker still didn't believe in God. He did listen intently, though, to Craig's sermons, because he liked Craig, and he knew Craig was real. And if Craig was saying this, then Craig must believe it, so it was worth listening to. But Craig just kept loving him. And Craig then brought members of the church family in to see Walker, and they all just kept loving on this man and this family. So at one point, the Hayeses, Walker Hayes, they lost their minivan because it had been part of a promotion deal from his recording contract. Lost his recording contract, the dealership came and took the minivan back. They had, at this point, 6 kids and 2 adults and a car with only 5 seatbelts. Are we doing the math and seeing the problem here? So Craig's family would loan them their minivan from time to time because the kids played sports and kind of help out. But Craig's family felt led to give them their minivan. And they prayed about it. And they got a really clear message from God. Like the next day, Craig had an investment that paid off, and they were able to pay off a bunch of their debt. And they knew that that's what they needed to do. And they did. They signed over their minivan. They went to the ballpark where the kids were playing with the minivan, already signed the title, and loved on Walker so much that he felt that he had to take that minivan. He wasn't happy about it, but he took it. What you need to know about Craig's family is they're not independently wealthy, and it's in the book. At the time that they did this, they had $39 in their checking account and $249 in their savings account. But they felt led, they prayed, and they were given really clear direction, and they acted on it. Now, a used beat-up minivan is not what put Walker Hayes over the edge into believing in God, following Christ, and becoming a Christian, because he is. A lot more happened, and seriously, get the book. It's awesome. It really is. So why do I tell you this story? I'm telling you the story because I really believe firmly in my heart one day Craig is going to be before Jesus, and he's going to hear, "Well done, good and faithful servant." One part of this that I didn't tell you, it's a really important part. Make you wait for it. The first time Craig met Walker Hayes, that first time at that church, Walker Hayes admits that he had been drinking all day long. He probably reeked of alcohol the time that he was there. He's an alcoholic. He's in recovery now. But Craig didn't flinch when he smelled it. He just welcomed Walker and said, "Glad you're here. Any minute." Think about that for a minute. What does that look like? You're at church. A new family comes in. You've never seen them before. 5 kids, parents. That's a lot when you see 5 kids, isn't it? You have parents, and the dad reeks out of the home. And what do you say? "Glad you're here. Give them the right hand of fellowship." And you mean it. And you mean it so much they know it. The lyrics of the song truly say it all. Craig Cooper gets it. He understands what it is to emulate Jesus' ministry to those that you meet. Walker Hayes caught a glimpse of Jesus in every interaction that he had with Craig and with the other members of Redeeming Grace Church, because that's the name of the church. It was those everyday interactions that melted the ice on his heart and healed the wounds left from prior church interactions that had left him shut off from God the Father. Walker could see that Craig had a relationship with Jesus and that he knew him. Walker could see that although he doesn't understand church, he understands Craig. And he understands the relationship that Craig has with Jesus. And through this, Walker now knows Jesus too. And that's something important that we all need to remember. You may be the only Jesus someone ever sees. And what do you want that to look like? Do you want it to look like the church that put Walker Hayes into church PTSD? Or do you want it to look like a Craig Cooper, Elijah Peer church kind of moment? And y'all, that's what we're called to do as well. You know, sometime back, Peg, Allison, and I, we went to see Lisa Turkhurst of Proverbs 31 Ministries, and she spoke about this too. She spoke about these verses. And she said, you know, I know one day I'm going to meet God, and I believe I'm going to hear, well done, good and faithful servant, but it's going to have nothing to do about the books I've written, about the lectures I've given, about any of these lecture halls that I've packed out. It's not going to have anything to do with that. It's going to be all of these small, everyday interactions that I've stopped the busyness of my life and taken time to have one-on-one, meaningful interaction with hurt and hurting people. That's what matters in kingdom building. That's what counts. That's what leads to well done, good, and faithful servant. When we meet our master, excuses are not going to cut it. This parable tells us that. God has given all of us a talent, every last one of us, according to our abilities. We've all got talent. And you, and me, everyone, we have been given a call to advance his kingdom until he calls us home or until he returns. What are some excuses people use not to use the talent? Come on, this is your part. What are some excuses? Y'all giving them, I have. What are some excuses? What is it?
I don't know.
I'm having talent. That's not true. What else is it?
Don't have the time.
Don't have the time. I don't have the time.
Afraid.
Oh, afraid. That's another big one. How about I've already given enough. I've put in my time. I'm retired. Get that one too sometimes, don't we? Y'all, what would we have done if Jesus had retired before he got to the cross? Ouch! Living a servant one and two lifestyle is not hard to do. We've got to walk in step with Jesus and let him take the lead every day. He's going to open your eyes. He's going to show you opportunities that are out there. And you're going to be able to miss the busyness that's around you and see what's been in front of you the whole time. I want to give you an example that Pastor Hubs and I have run into, and I'm not doing this to say, oh, look, we're so great. That's not it. I just want to give you an example of something that you're going to run into that you can do. We go to dinner usually at least once a week, usually around Thursdays if we're tired. And we were out at dinner at a restaurant, and usually wouldn't have noticed this, but we noticed our server. She was having a rough night. She really was. And she was working with this table of about 12 people, and they were giving her a hard time. She came over to us, and she just looked worn and weary. We just took a little extra time to talk to her, just to talk with her. And we learned a little bit about her. Asked her where she was from, if she had any family, or if she was a single mom. She had two kids, both at the age of four. That would be tired in itself. Her mother lives with her. Her mother has a mental illness. She cares for her, too. And she works as often as she can and loves those babies and wants to give them all that she can. And we left her a larger than usual tip just because we felt led to, because she could use it. And we probably weren't going to miss it. So the next time she came in, she saw us and she lit up instantly. She didn't wait for the same person. She said, come here, you're my table. So we go over and we sit with her. And she just started chatting with us, and we chatted with her. We asked how our kids were. Asked how her mom was doing. Then we learned that night, too, that she rescues all the stray cats in the neighborhood. So we just chatted with her some more. We gave her another good tip when we left. So the next time we came in, there she was again, and we got her again. In fact, the same person says, oh, you like her, right? And we'll sit you with her. So we go over there, and she stops. She says, y'all got to ask you a question. I just need to know. And we said, okay. Why y'all give me so much money? I teased Pastor Hubs and I said, you know, I think she really believed we were going to kidnap her one day after her trying to abduct her or something. But I just looked at her and I said, do you have a heart? Are you a good person? Are you a good mom? A good daughter? She answered yes to all those. And I said, well, that's what we do. So after that, when we go in, even if she's done with her shift and getting ready to leave, she'll come over and sit down with us and we catch up and we talk about her and her babies and it's her birthday and all these different things. All the busboys, everybody in the restaurant knows this. We talk about church sometimes. We talk about Jesus. We ask how their families are. We bring a little Jesus to the Bob Evans in Mason, West Virginia every time we go in. But you guys have that ability too. And it's not about the tip. It is not about the tip. Now, it broke the ice in this situation. I'm not going to lie. It did. But it's not about the tip. It's yourself. Give of yourself. For her, she's a mom of two kids under the age of four. We take time to have conversation with her. That may be the only conversation she gets in a day that doesn't have Bluey or whoever else is in it. That kind of stuff. That's important. So we are not to give society expects us to give, as the world expects us to give. We're to give as Jesus taught us to give. What is it they say? Time is money, right? It's our most precious commodity. Sometimes that's the biggest thing you can give. So remember too, Jesus entrusted people with talents and their abilities. So yeah, a millionaire can write a big check. Billy Graham can pack a crusade. We may not be able to do either of those things. But God gave us a talent. And that we are just as important as the millionaire and as Billy Graham. And we are just as responsible to use those talents to the best of our abilities. So when the master comes back, I want to hear. And I hope you hear. Well done, good and faithful servant. Would you bow your head with me? Father, we come to you humble and grateful for the talents you've given us. Help us to have fiercely open, brave, generous, and obedient hearts, ready to use those talents to advance your kingdom. Help us to open ourselves to your will and step out in faith to your will in our lives. In your name, amen. I believe we have a praise song, right? I think it is. Yeah.